Welcome back. We are joined again by Stanislav Krapivnik, a former U.S. Army officer, originally from Donbass, and who has returned. Thank you for coming back on the program. We see now that I would call it the U.S. war on both Iran and Russia appears to be getting out of control in terms of the massive escalation. The brutality of the war is increasing. This week, I think, was especially dramatic. Ukraine and NATO has done the massive attacks on Russian ships. Then on Moscow, we see now Russia retaliating with this attack on Kiev. Record large strike in terms of the use of missiles against the Ukrainian capital. And again, the war on Iran is a story of its own. What is happening now? How are you, I guess, reading the situation?
Glenn, hi. Just want to warn everybody, I'm on vacation right now, so I don't have my full setup, so the voice may be off a bit, and there will be some noise from outside. I'm on a balcony to get some privacy as much as I can. So first of all, just a little on the, I did a video for people who are believing the Western propaganda about there is no fuel in Russia. All the crops are rotting in the field and all the other hoopla that, by the way, is a repeat from last year, maybe just came out a little bit earlier. There is fuel. There are some lines. There's always lines, first of all, this time of year, because there's massive people moving south for vacation. There are additional lines. That's true. I won't deny it, but every second gas station or so has fuel, petrol station, fueling station, whatever you want to call them. So there's fuel. You can see the videos, and there's tractors working out in the fields, combines taking the first. In the south, we get two harvests a season, particularly of wheat and sunflowers. Corn takes longer. But the wheat's already been collected or is in the process of being collected, and the sunflowers in the farther south have already been collected and are being replanted. So you can see that on the video I put out. On the strikes, yeah, the Ukrainians, oh, first of all, just to understand Russians, I'm laying on the beach with the family, the sirens kick off, that there's drones in the air, nobody moves. You can hear some of the drones flying by. And then you can hear the automatic fire from outside the city in the zone, taking the drones out. Nobody moves. Welcome to Russians. Just to understand how you really can't scare Russians. Anybody remembers the takeover by the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt? There was a lot of fighting that was going on. Russians vacationed Sharm el Sheikh and other areas, while the Europeans and the Americans were running for their lives in every direction, every bus and airplane out of there. Russians didn't move. They didn't care. Fighting's outside the resort area. And if you screw with the Russians too much, most of the men know how to fight, so they'll just take up weapons. They probably don't want to do that. And the Islamic jihadists didn't touch the Russians. And when they took over, they just let them all leave. It's more peaceful that way. That's the Russian mentality. Again, Gorlovka is a prime example. Pre-war population, 380,000, 12 years with no water, running water. Current population, 320,000. You can't scare us. That's the mentality. Now, they have moved to strikes on more economic targets. There were two big warehouses that I hit for Wildberries. Wildberries and Ozon are two giant mail order, or I guess it's not mail order anymore, it's online order. Company is the size of Amazon. They cover Russia and Russian-speaking areas outside of Russia, like Kazakhstan, places like that. And two major warehouses were hit. Now, you know, they're switching toward base economic targets. And you know, this will more than likely backfire and more, because Wildberries is, I don't not remember her name. Sorry about that. I do not remember her name because I'm just horrible with names. I can look her up real quick. The woman that owns Wildberries, Tatiana Kim. So she's Russian, but she's of Korean descent, as are a lot of Koreans, Korean descent mixed and non-mixed in Russia. She's also the richest woman in the world. So maybe with this, with her property being destroyed, it'll just add even more pressure and let Yim Radyimovich to strike European factories and just get this going already. If this is what Europe wants, and obviously it is, I'm not talking about maybe the average person on the street, but most Europeans seem to back their owners. And Europe's really itching for a war. We hear that every single friggin' day, dozens of times. Maybe it's time that, you know, when not just the regular people are screaming in the streets, strike the European Union, strike them hard. But when the rich, the very rich, started saying that, sooner or later, that's going to happen. And the sooner European factories are burning, either we get on with World War III and get it rolling, or Europe backs the hell off and sits its ass back down and starts negotiating before it's exterminated. I mean, this is the point that where it's getting to. You know, I'll tell you what, the average Russian, if you ask him, butcher off Europe, or if you have a choice between saving Russia and having to butcher off Europe, they'll show you butcher off Europe. So Europeans have are just, the hatred is growing. I mean, it is growing. The Russian economy is not nearly as impacted as I'd like to think. There has been difficulties. I won't deny that. One of the reasons they're switching to economic targets, so they can't hit the military targets, and the Russian military is advancing. But the pressure on Vladimir Vladimirovich to start burning the European Union is growing, and I'm talking burning. It will grow. It'll start with strikes on plants, on these manufactured plants like Rheinmetall. They'll start screaming. The Europeans will do something stupid, as they invariably will. They have you have to have actual kind of some kind of brain power to go, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. They don't. The people that rule Europe absolutely lack anything that even resembles common sense. And they will escalate, and it'll be counter-escalation. Where the escalation stops, I don't know. Just to understand, Russia is prepared for a full conventional war. For the last 3 years, Russia is producing between 1,200 and 1,500 main battle tanks every year. These aren't going to the Ukrainian front. These are being stacked along with thousands of missiles. What you see in Ukraine is not massive Russian production. Russian economy is not yet on a war footing, not a real war footing. It's 6 or 7% of the economy right now, of GDP. When it goes to war footing, it'll be 30 to 40%. That's a whole different level, and it's being prepared for a war footing, and possibly even after the September election, we may be in a full blown war, because the pressure is on, and the pressure from the society is on. Now, the very rich are being hit, and it's not going to have the effect that the Europeans think it having. I'll just add this. You know, for the last 2 months, or particularly last month, I've been calming down Westerners living in Russia. Because a lot, not all of them, far from it, but a lot of them are freaking out. Russians don't freak out. It's okay, you want war, we'll give you war. Fine. You know, some Russians, of course, particularly if you listen to Dr. O, who has no idea what the hell's going on, outside of having spoken to some moving guys and some taxi drivers and his liberal friends, who don't consider themselves Russian most of the time anyways, most Russians are, you know, stiff upper lip and throw something heavier back at the other guy. That's the Russian mentality. Like I said, you know, we're laying on the beach and you can hear the drones flying overhead. The sirens are wailing. Nobody's moving. That's the Russian mentality. As Napoleon said, it's not enough to shoot a Russian soldier once. You have to shoot him twice, and then you have to go on and up that goddamn hill and knock him over. That's what Europe's facing.
Well, if one makes the comment that Russia has been restrained, it's usually, you know, pushed back, you know, about how brutal and gruesome they are. But, you know, I saw Zelensky tweet today that, you know, Russia carried out one of the largest attacks ever. That is 40 missiles and 120 attack drones, and then he writes, one person has been killed in Kiev. Again, you would have to think, if you use 160 air vehicles and one person gets killed, that, you know, civilian casualties are being taken into consideration in terms of picking targets. But what you said, I thought it was an interesting, you know, the disagreements we now see between people like Doktorov on one side and Ritter on the other. I find it interesting, though, in terms of how to assess who is winning, because We see on one hand the loss of territory, the casualty ratios, you know, all of this indicating Russia is winning. The Doktorov argument, though, is that NATO is degrading the sovereignty of Russia. Its deterrence is weakened. That is, NATO can now essentially blow up critical infrastructure in Russia, economic targets, without any consequences. I mean, Russia strikes Ukraine, but that's not deterring NATO. They're not counting Ukrainian assets or casualties. This is, you know, it's not deterring to NATO. So it is an interesting point of view, though. That is, how do you measure progress? I was wondering, what is your take on this? Because I know you, of course, you're a former U.S. Army officer, but you're now in Russia. You obviously don't, you're leaning towards Russia should have restored its deterrence and already hit back, not just against Ukraine, but also its Western handlers.
Yeah, look, I'm a hardliner, and I've always been, maybe because I'm military. And, you know, what you tend to do for a career, or at least a very good chunk of your career, you tend to think that way. So military, foreign intelligence, lawyers, those that type, they tend toward negotiations. I'm not against negotiations, but, you know, I tend toward the view of Rome. I'd rather be feared than I'd be loved. Loved gets betrayed. So if Europe, pardon my French, shites itself every time they hear the word Russian, we will live in peace. Oh, the Europeans may squabble amongst themselves, but the non-Russian Europe that at 52%, 58% of the subcontinent will never think twice of looking east again. So that has to be the deterrent. And the only way to reach this deterrent now is massive military strikes. Cripple your, take a couple of European countries. You don't have to hit everybody. We don't have enough resources to hit everybody equally. You make examples, and you make examples logically. You don't hit the Poles, especially when the Poles are now fighting it out with the Ukrainians, and that's getting more and more vicious. Why would you hit the Poles? Actually, you hit the Germans. You want to, not the East Germans. You hit the West Germans. You cripple the West Germans from head to toe. You take out their bridges. You take out their gas storage facilities. You take out Rheinmetall and its headquarters. First thing you hit is the headquarters. You take it all out. You take the executives out. You take their assistants out. You take out the entire staff. Then you take out the facilities. This is how you do real combat. You go after the elites. The only part of East Germany that should be hit is Berlin, the headquarters of the chancellor. You go after the elites. Why should the people suffer when the elites want this? Now, if those people in West Germany still want to fight, you cripple their economy. Winter's coming. It always is. You take out any of those Oreshniks will go right through into those gas storage, underground gas storage facilities. Good luck on winter when it comes. You take out the ports too, the LNG ports particularly, so they can't bring LNG in. Winter will come. Extreme cold and hunger has a tendency to really get people's minds in focus. You want to fight, this is what the fight's going to be. That's the only way you do it. You choose a few targets like that, and you bring the pain down on them hard enough. And then you give them an option to back off. This is wave one. Back off. Negotiate. Not quite sure what that was. Tell me, Chris Hall, sorry about it. Or it'll be wave two. Now, having said that, I said from the very beginning, understanding the West, I said from the very beginning, when Slovakia gave the first tanks over, I was on Russian media saying, you know, we should be hitting Slovakia. Why Slovakia was pushed forward? Because it's small, and if Russia had hit back hard against Slovakia, all of NATO would have backed off. So, it's not us. It's those stupid Slovaks. We told them not to do it. But they went and did it anyways. But because Russia didn't, everybody took a look and said, oh, okay. And the gates of hell opened up. And let's start flooding everything in. That was a massively missed opportunity to end this war probably 2 years earlier and back NATO the hell off. Now all it's done is boost the mouth breathers that are the ones running NATO into thinking that they can do whatever they want whenever they want. And yes, deterrence has to be reinstated. And unfortunately, deterrence is going to be reinstated only one way. That's going to be with a lot of bloodshed. And the further we go on down this road, the more blood it's going to take to reinstate deterrence. And I'm not one to start screaming, let's throw around nuclear weapons. That's kind of a final stage, and I don't see actual control once nukes start getting used. It's very hard to slow that down or to say, okay, we've gone far enough. But conventional non-nuclear weapons, such as Dyoreshnik, bring that down on the EU Parliament and see what happens afterwards. And see those that survive, what kind of mood they're going to be in afterwards. This is the only way you do it. You bring it home to the elites. It's the European elites will not understand anything else, unfortunately. That's the only way to do it.
Well, sadly, yeah, I do see this is the direction we're headed now, though. The idea that this is sustainable, this kind of massive attacks on Russia, or, well, it's quite obvious the Europeans are behind it, and the Americans as well. And, well, that was kind of my last question, though. That is, the U.S. has shifted its position. Well, I'm not sure if it's official position. I'm not sure if Trump ever was genuine about diplomacy. I would like to think he was, but given what we've watched in Iran, I've reason to doubt it. But either way, it's kind of besides the point by now. What is interesting that he's definitely sees a greater role for the United States now in the war against Russia. He went from wanting to finish this war, at least that's what he claimed in 24 hours, to now arguing that, yes, that there's an escalation now, but that's good to end the war. He praised Zelensky for doing an amazing job with the drone strikes, that is, drones supplied by NATO, and NATO providing the targeting. And overall, the main, well, information war we're now seeing is essentially, well, at least the Trump is sold, that the tide is turning, that the Russians are being defeated, and the Ukrainians are ascending. How do you see America's role in this? Because as you suggested before, the outbreak of a direct war between Russia and European NATO countries, it seems more likely than not by now. But I'm curious, what do you expect to see from the Americans? Again, as a former American officer as well, to what extent would they want to get involved given the presence of, well, so many nuclear weapons? Or do you think they will just allow the Europeans to be, well, essentially new Ukrainians, that is, to also just throw themselves at the Russians while the U.S. sits back and, you know, praise them rhetorically or with weapons and intelligence?
You know, I'll say this. The Iran war, the American illegal aggression against Iran, has been shown in the U.S. To be the most unpopular war since polls were started, which was, I think the polling started after the Korean War. So at this point, the Iran war, well, the last polling was 1% less popular. Sorry about that. I'll put my hands on the table and start shaking. It's 1% less popular than the Vietnam War, except that the Vietnam War got to that point. It was a relatively slow process with increase of advisors and more CIA advisors, special ops advisors in this case, trainers for partisan warfare. Then eventually the 1st Battalion of Marines came in to secure an airfield and let the South Vietnamese Army start fighting. And then, you know, there's a great book, King of War, I think was the name of it. It was written by, I think that was the name of the book. There's a couple books I've read on it, autobiographies. But there's one that was written by a lieutenant who was in that battalion, the 1st Battalion that came in, and how it all expanded out. He was first company into Vietnam of the Marines. And it grew. And for a long time, the American population backed it. And then eventually, you know, disappointment started, the way the draft was handled started grating on people's nerves, and it went down. There was no such thing in this case. This started as 1% less popular than Vietnam at its worst point. The American people have never been behind this war. Trump has a lot of problems. Quite literally, within the next month and a half, the big season for campaigning starts. Lindsey Graham has had his little talk with Jesus. I don't know where God sent him, but I can guess. At this point, not for me to decide, but I can probably take a wild, educated guess. What we're seeing, though, is the pro-war people in Congress are having a problem, because it turns out Lindsey was their main spokesman. We're already seeing a lot of problems with the Armed Services Bill that U.S. Congress came back 2 days ago from break. They spend more than a third a year on break, but they just came back from another break. They're now having problems pushing it back. It looks like it's going to fail. The Israeli put Israel inside of the U.S. Military bill, basically. They're having a lot of problems. It turns out Lindsey Graham was actually one of the biggest movers, shakers. Blumenthal is a dud as far as popularity and being a face on television, and they're having a lot of problems. Cotton's not much better. So how much are they going to be pushing to go into this war, especially with both the Democrats and the Republicans losing people left and right? It's like 80-something percent of the population is now independent, voting population, is a big question. But of course, for the Americans, the ideal is still the Ukrainization of Europe. Let the European meat go to the butcher shop. We're making money off this. Europeans, this is hard for the EUers to swallow. Your meat. You are no more, you're a little bit, probably not even a little better in Ukraine. You're just a little further behind Ukraine of being turned into a commodity. And how many of your people get killed off? We'll live and see, because the Americans are making money. That's sort of the English to a degree, but the English always have, the problem with the English is they're not as smart as they think they are. They're really good at starting wars, and they keep thinking they can start wars and get other people to fight them, and they always wind up getting sucked into those wars. Be it the Napoleonic Wars, be it the wars of 18, the Napoleonic Wars, including the War of 1812, be it World War I, be it World War II, they keep getting sucked in of the wars and the conflicts that they start, that they get everybody to start fighting on. And they've lost everything already to it. They put their bets behind the Americans. The Americans that did the most to destroy the British Empire more than anybody else. At least finish it off. It was pretty weakened as it was. Let's not forget that. 1950s and 1960s, the Americans were doing as much, if not more, than the Soviet Union on freeing the colonies. That is, destroying the colonial empires of the European and the Western Europeans. So, no, I don't think the Americans are going to be too up on fighting a war against Russia, because let's be realistic. First of all, we know the Patriots is a piece of crap. It can more or less take out fighters and fighter bombers, unless their missiles can do a standoff range outside of its effective range. It's worthless against ballistics. We've seen that. Russian missiles work. Russian radars work. We see them work every single day. We also see videos of dozens of Patriots flying up and missing one not exactly super high-tech ballistic missile. We're not even talking about hypersonics. We just saw ballistics strike a Jordanian base. And believe you me, there was more than two guys killed. You see any of those videos in the blast that the soldiers live in containers, those containers went kaboom and started rolling when a blast came through and there was a raging fire. You think only two guys died from that? Maybe three injured. Of course, there's a hell of a lot more people have died than the U.S. will ever admit to. But that's the point. They may not admit to it, but they know it. They know what they're taking as far as casualties. So they're probably not going to be too interested. They can't handle Iran. I mean, short of Trump going nuclear. And apparently, at least from what I've heard from different sources, he's now tried that twice. And Keenan has told him to go bounce. So at least the U.S. military is making a stand on not going nuclear, for now at least. Where will Trump take all this? Well, he's going to be very happy to have Europe fight. I mean, for those Europeans that haven't woken the hell up, I guess when the press gangs show up to take your kids or you, and they will, because the leadership of Europe is watching what's happening in Ukraine, they're learning. They're learning the exact same roles. And for those of you who are listening, here's the thing to understand. The best way, when you're in an unstable regime, like almost every EU province is an unstable regime, including the EU itself, the best way to get rid of your opponents is war. It's martial law. It's mass arrests of the enemy or the fifth column. The best way to get rid of them, just like the Ukrainians are doing to priests, to Russians in central Ukraine, is to send them off to the front to die. And that will be repeated ad hominem across most of Europe. And I'm hope that Europeans wake up, especially those that are already woken up and understand just how deep they're in. The people that rule over you hate you, and they will more than love to take that opportunity to get rid of you. So that's the point here. So I very much so hope that the Europeans are listening, and they're not going to wait to become meat. They're going to do something about it. The people that rule over you, I mean, if this was any bit of a sane nation, there would have been revolts, armed revolts across every European EU nation state. Well, a couple of them have basically had that. Bulgaria has overturned the government. A few of them are on the edges of it. But look, I mean, the people that rule over Europe, they've destroyed the economies. They've destroyed the future for generations. They're replacing the population with incredible speed. I mean, there's nothing to compare to this short of the barbarian invasions of the Roman Empire. When masses, that mass of people, of humanity, just comes across your border. Except that, you know, this isn't barbarians pushing across a weakened Roman Empire as borders in some out-of-the-way province. This is the leadership going, hey, we love you. Come over. Breed out our own people. I mean, but that's the reality of what's happening. And now this is just the next step in this. This in any sane nation, there would have been revolts a long time ago. No European in the EU lives better today than he lived 10 years ago, except the very, very rich. They're making a lot of money out of it. The average, the bottom 98% are not living better. And the bottom is living on barely survival rations at this point. It's only going to get worse. So from that point, the Americans are not going to get involved. China's having a great time because the U.S. has stretched itself so ridiculously thin. And Trump can't back out for several reasons. One, he still owned property. Two, there are no voices left. Look who's left in the White House that was against this. Vance. But there's only so far the vice president could go against the president. Two, without invoking the 25th Amendment. JFK? And he's been neutered because all the people around him that he brought in have been removed. He's the only one left, and he's been basically thrown as a human sacrifice to Big Pharma that he tried to control. So he's out of the way, too. So that's it. There's nobody left. This is the same thing that happened to Trump 1. Exactly the same thing that happened to Trump 1. Now, people are saying, making excuses. Oh, Trump was an inexperienced politician. He didn't know they were going to all get replaced by neocons. Oh, he made mistakes, but he's smarter now. No, he was. I mean, I don't know whether he's smarter or not, but he knew exactly what was going on, and he did it again. Actively did it again.
Yeah, so during the election campaign, when he was on Joe Rogan, he was making the point that his mistakes was to surround himself with some of the hawks, like Bolton, but what did he do? He got Graham as his new sidekick. So I'm starting to think this is by design. Either he's incompetent or he's deceptive, but at this point, does it really matter, I think.
right. It doesn't. He is deceptive. Let's begin with this. He is absolutely deceptive. Beyond a doubt. He played this well, or the deep state has played him well as the outside candidate. But they always go 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. You know, the Democrats are used to take a big step forward in whatever agenda they're being pushed. And then the Republicans come in there, oh, this is too far. We need to pull back. So Democrats have taken two steps forward. The Republicans take one step back. See, now this is better. And it's continuously like this. So they calm people down. Look, you know, you went from family values. You have a nuclear family and all that. To let's cut off the gonads of little boys and the breasts of little girls, and we'll drug them up with hormones that'll destroy their bodies to keep it from puberty as puberty blockers and so on and so on. And that's the step of the Democrats. And then the Trumpites come in there. It's like, oh, we're back to traditional values. Just LGBT minus the T. That's traditional values now. And he said, I'm the most pro-gay administration ever. But that's the difference. That's just the obvious one that anybody can see. You know, first of all, I honestly, as long as it's between two consensual adults, I don't care what they do inside their house. I don't want it out in the street, period. Anybody, especially around kids. Doesn't matter what sex you're in. But, and I honestly, I feel sorry for these people like Bess and others that find themselves, but what they put their wanker in. If that's all you can, well, Bess also has ruined a couple economies. But, you know, if that's the only defining thing about you is who you smack at night, or maybe not at night, maybe in the day, that's your defining characteristic. You're a sorry human being. I mean, I feel sorry for you. That's all you have in your life. But that's how a lot of these people characterize themselves. And this is the 1-2 stuff. But we've seen this in financialization of the U.S. Totally. We've seen Obamacare. Was supposed to be this pseudo socialist thing for the people, for medicine. Of course, it was never that. It was just a present to the big finance. And then the people started arguing, "Oh, this is horrible. We can't handle this." So now the Republicans come in. "Oh, we're going to fix it. We're going to get rid of it." But of course, when they get in, they didn't get rid of it. They modified it to make it easier to swallow for the people. And then the next step and the next step. And it's the same thing we see in the U.S. And not just in the U.S. We see this in Europe, too. The agenda keeps getting pushed forward. 2 steps forward, 1 step back. 2 steps forward, 1 step back. And it works beautifully. And the people's attention span is so short that they go, "Oh, see, it's changed. It's not as bad as it was a year ago." Yeah, but now look, think back 3 years ago. How things were, but that's already too far for most people. So yes, this is continuing, and Trump's just part of this agenda, and they played it well. They played him absolutely well as this outside force that came in.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I like Vance many things about him, but I remember Bush Senior. You know, I thought, this is when the Wolfowitz doctrine, all of this was rolled out. And I thought, well, that's not good. Well, at least Clinton will be better. Then he has his nation building. And then Bush Sr. comes along arguing, well, you know, we're not going to do nation building. And then, of course, you have the worst nation builder. Then, of course, you have, the new Obama, we're going to change. And every single one, they mobilize some enthusiasm by a population which is exhausted by war, and it doesn't change. I would see many positive things about Vance, I think it would be better than Trump. At the end of the day, I don't think it really matters who sits on the throne anymore. I think the whole state, the structure is built for empire, and I don't think that's going to change no matter who sits there.
Any final thoughts? It's not just built for empire, it's built for oligarchical empire. Because at some point you may have an emperor that can actually do something or take a nation into some direction outside of what it was. But here, it doesn't matter. You're right. It doesn't matter who sits the throne. The last two presidents in the United States that could do anything outside of what they were told were Reagan and Papa Bush. I'm not defending Papa Bush. He had a lot of issues. But when the man could actually stand up to Israel and cut them off, so you knew he had some amount of actual power. And that was the last one. And he wasn't exactly, do as you wish. He was quite a bit part of the machine. But since then, it's just gotten worse and worse, incredibly worse. It's absolute control. So yeah, I don't see anything changing, unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time, and I hope you enjoy your holidays.